Blog Talk Radio.
Today we'll finish up with my top 10 trends list that I have predicted for 2012 as we look forward to the year ahead. And then we will pay tribute to the life and legacies of not just one, who you're normally used to hearing on this weekend, but two great men in the civil rights era, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., as you know, and his closest associate in the movement, Dr. Ralph David Abernathy. Because of the efforts and sacrifices of both King and Abernathy, women and people of color throughout the United States enjoy the benefits and freedoms of our American society. We'll also talk about the upcoming February 2nd Black History Breakfast. This is Dr. King's weekend, the eve of his weekend. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello and welcome to the show. I'm so glad that you've joined us today. It's hard to believe that January is certainly moving on and we are already almost in the middle of the month. This is probably one of the most important weekends coming up to celebrate and commemorate not the death but the birth of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And just in a few minutes I'm going to give my thoughts and share some readings with you and just give my own personal reflections, not just on Dr. King but also on the Abernathy family and the importance of all those who are connected to the civil rights movement. We hope that you are enjoying your week. It's raining here, but in some parts of Massachusetts, they have about 6 inches of snow on the ground, so I think the skiers are quite happy because we've had a pretty light and mild winter so far. I want to read off to you last week. If you did not hear last week's show, I encourage you to go back and listen to it. I talk about New Year's resolutions and how they really can be expanded to more of an 18-month concept instead of just looking at losing 10 pounds over the next 6 weeks or doing something that will be here today and gone tomorrow, but really looking at more of a way where resolutions can be significant and where you can look at it from a perspective of a longer-term initiative. I just, as you know, I'm a churchgoer, and I went to church this past Sunday and was absolutely riveted by our pastor's message and the importance of vision and the importance of creating a vision statement for yourself during the month of January. We've been doing that at our congregation for about 20 years, and about 12 years ago, I had the opportunity to create my own vision statement, and it was just reiterated last Sunday. So January is important. January is, I think, something that we look at and we set New Year's resolutions, but more importantly, I'm hoping that you will begin a pattern of sort of assessing your career path, assessing your personal life, figuring out the things that you can do differently this year, how you can do things and confirm the areas of expertise that you're really good at. But more importantly, put a pattern or put a format in place that can go from year to year, not just cuts off on December 31st, but something that literally can roll into the next year. That probably is the smartest and the most effective way to use your time and to operate as a person of consistency, looking at both things that happen on your job and things that happen elsewhere. Now, I want to share with you now for the next few minutes number six through ten of the projections and the predictions that I think will happen or maybe center stage as we look at the year 2012. If you're interested in 1 through 5, go back and listen to last week's program. It's all there. You can always download this show at any time here at blogtalkradio.com/globalcarol. And not just last week's show, I've been on the air here with Blog Talk now going on 2 years, and so there is a wealthy list of other programs on various topics that are some way related to your level of personal empowerment. So I would encourage you to go back, even my very first show that took place back in the spring of 2010, I believe it was. Again, the years are clipping away so quickly. But you can go back and listen to that show. A lot of the shows, I get a lot of insight and value out of them, even though they were broadcast some time ago. I'm actually looking at, probably 13 years now on the air. I've actually been on the air going on 13 years since 1999. First terrestrial radio on WILD, which is a heritage radio station. It was a heritage radio station in the greater Boston area. That's where I got my start in radio in September of 1999, and then switched over to another station, WBNW, a few years ago. So I've been on the radio for quite a while. Love the format. I don't think this will ever go away. It just becomes sweeter because we're on the internet now. And so the internet format allows my voice and allows my message to go a lot farther than it did with the local stations that I was on in the greater Boston area. But that's where I got my start, so I am certainly appreciative. Well, number six with our predictions and trends that we're looking at for 2012 deals with Europe, watching Europe. Increasingly, I try to nudge people in the work that I do with the diversity work and global diversity work that I do, that we are not in isolation. We are in tandem with the rest of the world, whether you believe it or not. Certainly when it comes to exporting products and dealing with immigration issues, dealing with workplace issues, that is all a connected world. And so now in the forefront is Europe and what's taking place in Europe. They're having some adjustments to make with the euro. The burden and the weight of responsibility in many parts is on Chancellor Angela Merkel, who is the head of Germany. Germany has the strongest and has had the strongest economy for quite some time. They are a central part of the euro. And as you see, countries like Greece and Italy and Spain go through their problems domestically, Germany is having to make decisions about how much to bail out these countries, what kind of concessions have to be made so that the economy will be stabilized going forward. So I don't have to tell anybody we're in a worldwide recession. This is not just in the United States. People are having issues and problems in various parts of the world, not all over the world, but certainly Europe is central to it. So why is this important? Because so much of our economy is tied in with the European economy. There are European countries now that own our banks. There's a bank here in Boston called Citizens Bank, and Citizens Bank is owned by the Royal Bank of Scotland. It is not located here in the United States anymore. It actually is based in Europe. So even when you look at our financial institutions, you look at some of our companies who have merged or have been acquired, many of them are based in Europe. So the economic forecast and outcome for Europe is very much our concern. And so watching Europe and watching the European Union, the euro, their currency, is as much a concern for Europe as it is for the United States and vice versa. Obviously, our economy is of concern to them, as well as how we are looking at the European economy. So that's number six, just watching Europe. Looking elsewhere in the world, number seven, you may want to write this down. You may hear this again. The countries that are on the rise are BRIC, BRIC. That was I didn't coin that phrase. That was coined by someone else. But BRIC stands for Brazil, India, Russia, and China. Brazil, India, Russia, and China. You're going to hear more and more about those countries. Brazil's economy is pretty resilient. They are not feeling the recession like we are. They are doing things in terms of energy efficiency to a greater extent than we are. They are not as dependent on crude oil as we are because they have already looked into and they're dealing with other forms of energy. You look at the World Cup that they're going to host, and I forget the year, but it's a couple of years from now. And the other ways that Brazil is coming into the forefront, it's just amazing. India is the same thing, with well over a billion people there. Much of India's growth deals with the connection that they have to the world. We certainly know about the work that is being done, not here in the United States, but call centers that are located in India because of their efficiency and cost factor. But in addition to that, they are increasingly becoming a world power. They have a lot of people there. Education is at a premium. I listened to a report a few days ago just about the significance of test scores in getting into an Indian university. Doesn't make any difference how wonderful you are or what your grades have been in school. There's a test, a standardized test that is given in India, and if you don't make the cut, you don't have a chance to go to a university in that country. So they are putting a premium on education and other aspects of their society, and it's certainly pushing them up the ranks. China, the same thing. Manufacturing is at an all-time high in China. There are Chinese concerns and companies now who are investing in the United States heavily. So from a manufacturing and an economic point of view, they are becoming a real powerhouse. The number two countries in terms of population in the world happen to be China, that's number one, followed closely by India. And then the other one, which was a surprise to me, but was Russia. We're talking about the decoupled Russia, not the USSR that broke up in 1991, but Russia, the country, a very large country, but becoming a real powerful, dominant economic force in world activities. From an energy point of view, they have a fair amount of oil that they supply to several Eastern European countries and elsewhere, but they are becoming a powerful house. So BRIC, B-R-I-C, remember that, Brazil, India, Russia, and China. Or let me say this, it's Brazil, Russia, India, and China, B-R-I-C. Number eight is the importance of community outreach and expanding your support to neighbors and friends. I think the harder things get, the more it's important for people to rely on each other. Now, I'm not going to get into a political discussion because I do feel that there is a role of government in all walks of life, no matter what your spectrum happens to be. And there is certainly a role for community. If we got rid of, in the United States, 50% of the community organizations and the nonprofits that are operating in this country, if they all disappeared, we would be in big trouble because of the jobs and the services that they do. But there's also a level of individual commitment that is needed now with our society growing older, with more and more people living alone or living isolated from other people. It means that we need to really use technology to our advantage so that we reach out to people who are in need. And these are people who can be down the street from you, across the road from you, 10 minutes or 15 minutes in your faith-based organization or whatever. But that whole piece of community outreach and reaching out to people when they are sick or they're having some issues or they're having some financial struggles, the number of people that we have who are out of work really means that we need to pay attention to each other and support and help each other as we go about our lives. We all live very busy lives, but still reaching out to other people in our communities, in our neighborhoods, I think is going to be a trend that will be even more important this year than ever before. Number nine is looking at the growth of women across the globe and many women who are finding their voice. All you have to do is look and see what's happening with the Arab Spring. What has taken place and what has happened since December of 2010 that marched all the way up into 2011. This time last year, we had the uncoupling of the decoupling of Egypt, and you already had Tunisia that had gone down by now. Amazing things have happened in the Middle East, and many of the voices of women are becoming recognized and noticed in that part of the world more than ever before. I look at that whole Egyptian uprising. There were a lot of women in key roles. They were marching, they were demonstrating, they were online, they were blogging, they were risking their lives. They died in many cases just to have their voices heard and to fight for freedom. And I'm just sort of highlighting Egypt, but it's certainly even going back to 2009 with the young woman who was shot and killed in Iran and how she became a symbol for unrest and injustice with people demonstrating and marching in the streets. We see what's taking place in Yemen right now and in Syria. Syria is a bloodbath, unfortunately. But again, the role of women, and I'm sort of highlighting that part of the world, but you can look in Africa. You can look at the three women who won the Nobel Peace Prize in Africa and again in the Middle East, and again see the importance and the significance of women, particularly in developing nations and in nations in far-off country, far-off lands, who are really speaking out and letting their voices be heard. So important. And then number 10 is the role of multiculturalism and diversity being a very important factor. It's going to certainly be a factor in our presidential election that will take place in November of this year. It will be a factor in our workplaces, how we work, how we learn to work with each other. It will be a factor in our neighborhoods, which still remain segregated to a significant degree. It will be a factor in our homes. And I think increasingly, not just because I've been doing this work for 25 years, but when I look at the role of young people and our younger generations who are so far removed from the life and times of Dr. King and Dr. Abernathy, it's textbook to them. When you talk about events that took place literally 50 years ago, in 1963, 1962, 1961, March on Washington in August of 1963, things that happened many, many years ago. It was in my lifetime. But for my children and for those who are younger in their 20s or so, this is something they're just reading about. So more importantly is developing a sense, a story about multiculturalism and diversity that you can tell and you can pass on to those who are around you. That is how it's going to spread and be implemented throughout, I think, the world. So these are the top 10 trends that I am looking at and thinking about for 2012. They will get posted on my website at some point in the coming days. It'll be on the homepage of either telcarole.com, that's TELLCAROLE.com, or at MSSConnect.com. We will actually post all 10 of them, just food for thought. And it was fun reading the list that I had from 1998 and how many of them were still pretty significant in today's time. So as we talk about that 10th piece, about multiculturalism and diversity, I want to dial back and talk about the significance and the importance of Dr. King and Dr. Abernathy. This weekend there are going to be activities. There's certainly going to be a wonderful event celebration that I'm going to go to up at the Middlesex Community College. University of Lowell is also a great school, but Middlesex Community College is also a fabulous school. They're a partner of mine as well. And Laura Smith with the Laura Smith Fund she knows how to tell the story and to pay tribute. She'll have several hundred people up at one of the convention centers up in Lowell, and we will celebrate in high style the birth and the life and the death of Dr. King. Laura is a good friend. She is a supporter of my activities. She is a sponsor of the Black History Breakfast that we're having on February 2nd, and her event will be a real tribute to Dr. King and all that he stands for. So I do salute Laura Smith. I also salute Reverend June Cooper. June Cooper is also a member of the Multicultural Symposium Series, a supporter, and she is the executive director of City Mission Society of Boston. City Mission is the oldest I think, one of the oldest organizations of its kind. It's a social justice organization that promotes a just society for all people. It's been around for many years, and Reverend June Cooper is the executive director. They are going to have their fifth annual day of service and learning, honoring the life and work of Dr. King, and this will take place. Let me get the date here. It is going to take place on Saturday, June 14th. So, again, there are going to be activities literally all over the country. I'm just highlighting these two events. The event with Laura Smith will take place on Monday, the 16th, the actual day that we're observing as King's birthday. His actual birthday is Sunday. June 15th, 1929 was when he was born, and he died on April 4th, 1968. But we celebrate this weekend for his birthday. And Dr. Reverend June Cooper's event, the Day of Service, where they're going to do a number of things. Volunteers will clean and paint classrooms at Newton Community Service Center in Newton, Massachusetts. They're going to paint hallways and other areas of the Russell Elementary School in Dorchester. They're going to assemble Lego biology kits. Now, that sounds really cool. At MIT, with People Making a Difference in the Boston Public Schools, they'll be doing that over at MIT in Cambridge. They're going to prepare meals and sort clothes at the historic Pilgrim Church, which is a wonderful place of refuge for many people in Dorchester. And they're going to build and set a performance build a set for a performance that will be held during Black History Month at the Roxbury Center for the Arts at the historic Hibernian Hall, which is a great center in Roxbury, Massachusetts. These will all take place simultaneously on Saturday, January 14th, and you can find out more information about that at www.cmsboston.org. Again, www.cmsboston.org. Highlighting that because the weekend has become a day of service. It has taken on a life of its own. It certainly was a hard, fast struggle. It was hard fought. There were some states like New Hampshire and Arizona that held out for a long time, but finally decided to come on board after Ronald Reagan actually signed the Martin Luther King Day observance. He is the only civilian, only person in that category in our country that has a day where it's a national holiday. He's the only person, and for many reasons. We look at Dr. King. I like to read this passage that I'm going to read to you in just a few minutes. We look at his life. He was a prolific writer, and his best friend was also a prolific writer, Dr. Abernathy. I am so grateful that I knew Dr. Abernathy. I had never met Dr. King in person. I have met Coretta Scott King. I've met her children. But I had not met Dr. King in person, although I had gone to some of their events, and I'd gone to their big rally in June of 1963 in Detroit when I was a child, 10 years old, and went with my uncle. And this was the forerunner to the March on Washington in August. Many of his speeches were sort of worked out and rehearsed in other cities before they hit the main stage, should I say, in Washington, D.C., and the I Have a Dream speech was actually used in part in a big rally that took place in Detroit in 1963. But you also think about the 1963 letter from a Birmingham jail. If you haven't read it, go online and get it. I think at some point I'm probably going to put it on my website. It is powerful. And let me just read just a paragraph from this. It's a very long letter, but he challenges the ministers who stood up and wanted him to stand down and just play nice and stop being a rabble-rouser. And he challenged those ministers. He thought that they were not being genuine to the cause of freedom. And it's just an incredible speech. Dr. King was a graduate of Morehouse College, Crozier Theological Seminary, and Boston University. He was a prolific man, one who had done so much. And in the letter, he says in this letter, "I am cognizant of the interrelatedness of all communities and states. I cannot sit idly by in Atlanta, and not be concerned about what happens in Birmingham. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. What affects one directly affects all indirectly. And I read that, and I've read that every year. I've actually printed and published this when I was on, when it was early in my radio career. This was actually part of a commentary I wrote back in 2002. And just incredible. And what I said was these words from the 1963 letter from the Birmingham jail set the tone of an action-oriented Martin Luther King Jr. as a direct response to the white Birmingham ministers who urged King to end his campaign of empowerment, freedom, and nonviolent warfare. King's greatness was anchored in his unshakable faith, his untiring army of volunteers, and his remarkable ability to communicate orally, in writing, and in spirit. And he was not alone in that, because his friend, his best friend, he actually, during one of his speeches, identified Dr. Abernathy as one of his best friends, was also a prolific writer. And I'm going to read something he said as a result of that Birmingham jail letter that was written by Dr. King. Dr. Abernathy was born on March 11, 1926. He died of complications, illnesses that he had in April 17, 1990. I knew him. I have stayed in his home. His widow is my very dear friend. She is going to be my guest speaker at the Black History Breakfast on February 2nd. She knows everything about the movement, as a result of obviously being his wife and being an active part of the movement. Dr. Abernathy grew up in Alabama. He was a very young minister. He went into the military during World War II, and then afterward he enrolled in Alabama State University. He then earned a Master's of Science degree in sociology from Atlanta University, and as an officer of the Montgomery, Alabama NAACP, he organized the first mass meeting of the Montgomery bus boycott to protest Rosa Parks' arrest on December 1st. Now, he and Dr. King knew each other from school days, but definitely reconnected when Dr. King was then sent to Montgomery, began pastoring in Montgomery, and then became the designated leader of the civil rights movement. They became fast friends and journeying in the vineyard, as they say, during the 11-month bus boycott and all of the civil rights activities. Dr. Abernathy was a prolific writer, prolific. I've seen his writings up close and personal. I've certainly chatted with him and talked with him years ago before he passed away. And this is what he said in his book that was written, And the Walls Came Tumbling Down, and the Walls Came Tumbling Down, that was his book that was written. He said, and this is about the Birmingham jail letter, he said, I often wondered what those 11 clergymen thought and felt after reading the eloquent and persuasive reply to their statement. And again, you're talking about an eloquent and persuasive reply that was written in jail. Were they convinced by it, or did they simply dismiss it as more radical nonsense? Did they eventually feel ashamed of themselves, or did they continue to feel proud that they had defended their city against the outsiders, the Trump? I have never read any subsequent statements by these gentlemen, and perhaps that says something about their ultimate thoughts on the subject. That is from Dr. Abernathy's book, And the Walls Came Tumbling Down. If you can get a copy of it, you can probably get it on eBay or somewhere elsewhere. I would encourage you, because it is, again, it will give you a sense of that era and the importance of that era. We're looking at King's birthday. We're looking at his closest associate, Dr. Abernathy. Juanita Jones Abernathy, my dear friend, who I will bring here on February 2nd. And my message is, when we talk about the top 10 trends for 2012, and we look at, most importantly, young people, It is so important for young people to understand their vested interest in understanding this history, because we need that to be conveyed to them so that they will be the leaders that we need going forward. We'll continue to talk about this in weeks to come. Thank you so much for being with me on the show today, and we will have another broadcast next week. Have a great weekend. Take care. Carol Copeland Thomas signing off.